When you want hummus, where in the KC Metro do you eat? Do you know the best place to get tahin? Tell us. This podcast, Up to Date, is making a best of the best list and needs recommendations for Middle Eastern and Mediterranean restaurants in KC. Text us at 816-601-4777. That's 816-601-4777. Standard texting rates apply.
From KCUR, this is Up to Date with Steve Kraske. I'm intern Gabby Martinez. Owning a home today is more expensive than ever, which means for a lot of people, especially people of color, it's inaccessible. Data from the 2021 census shows Black people make up around a quarter of Kansas City's population, but only around 7% of homeowners. And that trend holds at the national scale, too. A National Association of Realtors report says that the homeownership gap between Black and white people is the largest it's been in a decade. Godfrey Riddle wants to change that. It's why his nonprofit, Civic Saint, is working to build affordable tiny houses that are sustainable, too. To learn more about the work Civic Saint is doing, Steve spoke with Godfrey and Robert Taylor, one of the crew members working to build these tiny homes. Let's listen.
Well, you've mentioned that your family lost its first home to foreclosure when you were 12, Godfrey. As someone who's experienced insecure housing, can you tell us more about the impact that kind of situation has on somebody?
Certainly. And I do first want to preface it again. Thank you for being here or having me. I do want to preface it by saying that we were invisible homeless folks. I think that so we grew up in the suburbs of Kansas City in Johnson County. And I would say that we were invisible because we were fortunate enough to have hotels to shelter in for a bit and then family to stay with. So in that sense, we didn't have to face some of the hardest parts of homelessness, being unprotected, insecure on the street.
Yeah.
But it does really impact your worldview and your understanding of what shelter means, and then also what home ownership means and that safety and security.
Well, at some point you developed this idea of building tiny, affordable homes. Where did that come from?
You know, the pandemic. I want to start a family of my own, and I was looking for a way to generate a second line of income. And this was right before COVID, and Airbnb was going gangbusters. So I opened up one in my home. It was getting great traction. And I thought, well, why not make the investment into a tiny house in my backyard? Well, flash forward, we all know what happened during COVID with building materials, and that prompted me to look for cheaper, more sustainable, and enduring ways to build.
And that's exactly what you've done here.
Absolutely. So I ultimately found compressed earthen blocks. And then the sketch that folks are seeing out in the world, that tiny home I've dubbed our Stone Home Mini, that's truly what I saw in my backyard when I imagined what I wanted to look at every day.
I don't want to blow past this point too quickly. Compressed earthen blocks. This is potentially revolutionary. What are we talking about here?
Truly. So compressed earthen blocks, or CEBs, are made of 90% sandy clay soil. And then you add water and lime, and then compress it mechanically to churn out a product twice as strong as concrete, but also bulletproof, fireproof, seismically sound, and low maintenance to live with.
And this is coming right out of the earth. It's environmentally friendly. There's no huge issues with it, right, if I understand right?
Correct. So typically, if you think about the cross-section of the earth, specifically in Kansas City, you have your topsoil, which everyone knows and loves. That's what we need to grow food or garden. And then at the bottom, you have bedrock. That's what folks usually want to build on so your building doesn't sink. And then in the middle is what's called subsoil or fill soil. This is typically soil that's thrown out in the construction process, so it's truly waste. In Kansas City, our soil is predominantly clay-based, so it's really hard to do anything with. So I'm truly taking a waste product and turning it into this building material because perfectly for us, sandy clay soil is ideal for making CEBs.
So this is perfect for the Kansas City area here.
Yeah, and also much of the southeastern portion of the U.S. Atlanta and Georgia are actually some of the biggest clay producers in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Robert, you work with this material.
Yes, I do.
What do you make of it? How efficient, how effective is it?
I mean, first of all, first of all, it's a beautiful experience. It's something that I've never done before. So when I was introduced to it, I was kind of like, I didn't know what to take of it initially. So when we started making these compressed earthen bricks, I started to see how they could work, how well they could work in changing the revolution of building housing. It can revolutionize it.
Well, help me understand. This sounds like such a neat idea. Why hasn't anybody come up with it before now? Or why haven't I heard of it before now? Maybe that's the better question.
Well, I mean, first of all, you got to give credit to Godfrey. He's an innovative thinker. He's always looking for something to propel things forward. So I think it was something that once he identified it and saw that the community can benefit from it in a great way, I think he just took the idea and pressed forward with it. I just think that it's an ancient process that people haven't dug into and researched much.
Where'd you get the idea for it?
Netflix.
What? Really? Where else? What do you mean?
Truly. So I was watching a show during COVID, and a gentleman on there pitched the sale of his home, and it was made of compressed earthen block. And I'd never heard of it, but he started to share some of the benefits of it. So I thought, why not Google it and learn more? So compressed earthen block is actually part of a legacy that dates back to 8700 BCE in earthen construction. So we've built...
It's been around for a while.
Yeah, yes. It's tested. It's proven.
Mm-hmm.
So CEBs are just, in my view, the latest phase in that long history, because up until about the 1980s, we didn't have capacity to make the mechanics to produce them. So they're deployed everywhere else in the world. About 60% of the world's population lives in an earthen structure. And I thought, well, why not in America?
So you're not inventing this new way. You're just sort of stealing it from, it's been around for a long time. You thought, why not bring it to Kansas City?
Correct. I really wanted to find proven methods to offer affordable housing. In the Black community and marginalized communities writ large, there's a legacy of experimentation. So when I was building our business concept, technology notwithstanding, I made sure that all of the processes we integrate are 10 years old or greater, because they're proven. And also at that point, industry tends to change, so materials become really cheap.
You know, Robert, tell me about these brick making machines. How do they work? How do you get your hands on one of these things?
All right, so it's an RM 3000. It's a...
Oh, the old RM 3000.
Yes.
Yeah, I got
yes.
one in my garage.
It's an old school machine.
Yeah, there you go.
It comes from India. Very simple to work. Typically, those machines can work with about a crew member of a 10-person crew,
mm-hmm.
and produce about 1,000 bricks in an 8-hour shift.
1,000 bricks?
Yes.
Will that build you a house?
No.
How many 8-hour shifts do you need to build a house?
So we would need about 10. Mm-hmm. So our first home that's coming up in Montgall Park at the corner of 20th and Agnes Boulevards is going to be about 10,600 bricks. So it would take us about 10 and a half days to make that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how does it work? How does the machine work?
Okay, so... First of all, we got to get the materials ready for the machine. Mm-hmm. So as Godfrey said earlier, it's 90% soil, 10% water.
You got to dig a hole somewhere.
We get in the machine, mix everything together with the right measurements, and we scoop it into the machine, compress the brick. It's very simple. We just scoop it in, pull a lever down, it compresses it and pops it out.
Wow.
We take it. Sit it in an area where we begin the curing process. The curing process takes 21 days.
Mm-hmm.
After that 21 days, we'll do a soap test to make sure that the brick is able to absorb moisture without crumbling during the building process.
Mm-hmm. Well, this sounds like lickety-split. Pretty cool. I mean, what am I missing here? This sounds pretty easy.
Yeah. So I intentionally picked a building method that had many low barriers to entry. So you don't need a high skill level. You don't need to be a seasoned or trained mason. The material cost is pretty low because, again, our prices are literally dirt cheap for sourcing because...
No pun intended.
Yeah. Say, too late for that.
Right?
Yeah.
I didn't realize how many puns and metaphors I was stepping in. And then beyond that, I mean, raising a structure is really fast because our blocks look like dirt Legos.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty straightforward and simple building method, and you just need some lab hours or... test hours to build up your capacity.
So, Robert, once you have the bricks, how long does it take to actually build the tiny house?
Well, it can vary. It can vary. It depends on which house we're building. I mean, right now we have two
different designs. I saw
we have
online.
Two different designs. We have the Stone Home Mini, which is 384 feet and is lofted one bedroom with private patios, a full kitchen, bath, laundry closet, and vaulted living space.
Never have I heard a tiny home described that way. With makes it sound like it's a mansion.
Well, but, you know. I mean, hey, it's all about how you treat it. I mean, it's going to feel like it. It's going to look like it. So
The
next one is the Stone Home Signature. It's 847 square feet. It's a single family home. It has a protected rooftop and outdoor spaces with one or two bedrooms plus a kitchen, dining, and living room space.
Mm-hmm. So you have two basic designs?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Correct.
Okay. And where are your other houses going to be built? You mentioned the first one at 20th and Montgall?
Montgall Park, yes.
Montgall Park. Mm-hmm. Where are the other ones going to be built?
So right now, we're actually looking for a place to expand. I picked Montgall Park because it has strong ties to our Black history in Kansas City. It used to be known as Stryver's Row. So a lot of judges, attorneys, and other professionals from the Black community lived there. And I thought it'd be great to revive that part of town. It's also about 5 minutes away or to the east of 18th and Vine. Mm. So very close to entertainment, the crossroads, and the like. So that's probably where we'll grow.
How much is one of these tiny houses going to cost?
Yes. So true affordability. These homes, the Stone Home Mini, should retail for between $60,000 to $75,000. And then the Stone Home Signature, which is our flagship product, that 850 square foot two-bedroom home, that should appraise for between $130,000 to $135,000, meaning that someone who's making at least $36,000 per year or $3,000 a month gross in their household would be able to buy one of these homes.
And this is a completely transformative product in the housing industry compared to what people are looking at paying these days.
Oh my gosh, truly. It's really impossible to build for less than $200,000 if you're trying to make a 1,000 square foot home. In my view, that should be how much the home costs to buy, worst case scenario.
I mean, what we're talking about here, though, Robert, is tiny homes.
Yes.
Not everyone might be comfortable living in a tiny home because it's called tiny for a reason,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think one of the most important components of this project that we're embarking on is that it promotes a healthy family and community dynamic. When you provide housing for people, it has a trickle-down effect and creates more positive relationships in the community. And it starts with family in the household.
How will people be selected to live in these homes, Godfrey? What criteria do they have to meet, or do they have to meet criteria?
Well, I'm candidly still figuring that out because equity is very important to me and I don't want to contribute to housing inequity. So I'm trying to go about it in a way where the location we're situating ourselves in would attract people who have typically been left out of housing opportunities. So we work predominantly in redlined areas. So you're going to find, even to this day, mostly Black and brown, low-income folks are sequestered in those areas. And then as far as qualification, if you have a 580 credit score or greater, and again are making at least $36,000 as a household, you'll qualify for one of these homes.
I mean, do you have a waiting list right now? And people listening to this are going to be going, where can I sign up right now? And you're going to be a very popular guy here pretty shortly if you're not already.
Yeah, truly.
It's filling up.
It is. Yeah. We do have a strong waiting list. So I've got...
How long? Can I ask how long it is?
Absolutely. So we just crested 50 folks this morning for our first build. I do have two top buyers for the first home. One's a musician, and the second is a single mother. So we'll see which one of those two individuals makes the strongest bid for the first home. Within reason, of course. I'm not going to try to price them out of the market. Yeah. My goal is to get them into a house that they can afford, love, and stay in.
Hmm. You've said that you want to work with local nonprofits to help people who may lack the means to become homeowners. Which groups, which nonprofits do you think you're going to be working with here?
Truly, so that statement's drawn on my experience from working at Rightfully Sown with Jennifer Lapka Pfeiffer, helping to stand up that organization. And we worked predominantly with refugee communities and women. So I would like to replicate that because from my research into housing, I learned that Black women are among all demographics, they pay their mortgage at higher rates than anyone else.
Really?
And yeah, truly.
Interesting.
And that's a study that came out right after COVID had started. So it was summer of 2020. I came across that in CNBC. And then secondly, we know from an economic standpoint or community development standpoint, when you invest in women, they turn around and invest in their families and their communities. So I would really like to focus on working with Sheffield Place, Mother's Refuge, places where women are really looking to turn their lives around, or even single parents.
When we come back, we'll hear more from Godfrey Riddle and Robert Taylor about their work to build affordable, sustainable homes in Kansas City.
Robert, how tough are these houses to build?
I think it's a pretty easy process. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I have this extensive background in construction. So for me to come in and adapt to the process fairly quickly and embark in getting the foundation laid to get this project going, I think it's been fairly simple. I think I could teach someone.
Can you build one in a week?
Maybe two. Tops.
Maybe 2 weeks?
Yep, tops.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Are you the one actually designing the homes and building the bricks, Robert? Is that, and how big is your team?
I'm not necessarily designing the homes. I am participating in helping build the homes. Right now, we have a team of five people, including Godfrey. We have a resident artist named Jessie, and she's going to be painting a mural on our model home that'll be situated on 20th and Vine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. I was going to say you're unveiling the prototype for your first house during this week at KC Design Week,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Which will be followed by a discussion on the housing crisis for Black Kansas Cityans. Tell me more about the crunch here and how can people connect with this event you're going to be having, Godfrey?
Certainly. So if you go to kcdesignweek.org, you can learn more about the event called Super Abundant Neighborhoods. We're really looking at housing from the vantage points of the environment and economics. And within that economic plane, understanding both the cost to construct it, but truly building homes that are affordable to live in. So jumping back to our ideal buyer. In that scenario, their mortgage would be between $1,000 to $1,200 per month, and that includes your PITI, your principal, insurance, taxes, and interest.
That's the whole lug, $1,000 to $1,200 a month.
Yeah, that's
lower
than
most my mortgage. People are paying in rent right now anyway.
Correct.
Even at an affordable rate, right?
Correct. I mean, studio apartments downtown are well above that rate.
I mean, are we overlooking anything about sort of the ability of some people to live in a tiny home? I mean, it's not for everyone, or what do you know about that?
Correct. And I do want to clarify, too, while our mini is a tiny home, really I view our products as small homes. Tiny homes are great for adding what's called like a granny flat or just an extra vacation home in your backyard if you want an Airbnb. But really, I think that we're missing small starter homes. So think about Waldo. A lot of those homes are 1,000 to 1,400 square feet. Mine in particular is just under 1,400. It's 1395. Ultimately, that's where Civic Sane is headed. Our stone home signature is a small home at about 850 square feet.
Right.
Historically, you can find bungalows like that all over our city. ultimately we'll introduce our stone home plus that will sit on top of the range, and that will truly be a small home. So anywhere between 1,200 to 1,400 square feet. That way we're giving people an option to enter into the housing market, and they can stay in that house forever because it is big enough for a lifetime home. But ultimately, obviously, as their families grow, they have the chance to sell it and earn that equity back to do something great with their life.
We had a caller who wanted to clarify the price for the home. Does that also include the price the land is built on?
Correct. So because we're working in opportunity zone areas, we have access to land bank properties. Yeah, so that's been our primary mode of entry at this point, just to build up our financial capacity to then enter into the for-profit land market.
Is there any limit to how many homes you can build then using land bank properties?
Yeah, I do know the city has some limitations about how many properties you can purchase at once if you don't have a clear plan. But for us, our production capacity right now is roughly about 40 to 50 homes within a given year, until we upgrade our machinery to be semi-automated or fully automated. Then we could produce upwards of 100 homes per year.
So what's the ultimate goal here? I mean, can you see scaling this up to go across the Midwest, across the country? What are you looking at?
Yeah, scale is the intent. But I want to build a sustainable lifetime business that's able to offer employment to my team, but also be an enduring presence in our community for good. So ultimately, our goal is to close the racial wealth gap by providing well-paying or quality jobs and home ownership, and then benefiting from the ambient impact. But we can't do that from Kansas City alone. So ultimately, our intent is to scale to the top 30 markets that have a history of redlining, which is what creates those areas of town where you have disinvestment.
That was the voice of Godfrey Riddle, the owner of the Kansas City nonprofit Civic Saint, that's working to fix the housing crisis by building affordable and sustainable tiny homes. We also heard from Robert Taylor, one of the crew members working to build these homes. Up to Date is a production of KCUR, and this episode was produced by me, Gabby Martinez. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back with more Up to Date soon.